Coming up today on episode 5 of the Elevate 02 podcast, we are talking a little bit about the Jack Eichel trade. The superstar goes from Buffalo to Vegas and finds a new home with the Golden Knights. What goes into the issue of trust between the front office and players? And the crew shares some stories from their experiences that help bring it all into perspective. And we have a great conversation with Chris Kramer, the foremost authority on hockey logos and uniforms. Can't wait for you to hear this. Here's episode 5.
This is the Elevate 02 podcast, brought to you by Money Mitch, the podcast bringing you inside the world of hockey. From on the ice to inside the front office, we bring you places you've never been before. Now, here are your hosts, Tori Mitchell, Jonathan Bates, Brian Strait, and Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in episode 5 of the Elevate 02 podcast. Brady Farkas, Money Mitch, Jonathan Bates, Brian Strait with you again here. Appreciate all the feedback on episode 4. You guys have been awesome. Great feedback to the Chris Snow interview. A lot of you liked his story of his rise to the front office. A lot of you inspired by his battle with ALS. And you can donate by going to the Flames website if you're so inclined to do so. And I know every little bit helps there. So episode 5, crew, what's up?
What up, Farky?
You know, it's ironic that you start off with that, because I had somebody who's listened to all 4 episodes so far and said they're really enjoying the podcast, but they reached out to me and said, I can tell by your mannerisms and your voice inflection that you hate being called Farky. They said right away, I could tell you don't like that. And the answer is yes. I hate the nickname.
Oh, that's even better.
It's too bad. You're stuck with it.
That's why I haven't said it. You just buried yourself, Farky.
Yeah, that's it.
You literally just dug your own grave.
I was just hoping that at some point there'd be something, we'd get so big that something better would come along. But I know I'm stuck with it now. It's okay. It's the podcast. Life.
What would you rather?
Yeah. I mean, did you have a nickname when you played baseball?
Yeah, Farkas.
That's not a nickname. That's your name. That's your actual birth. It's on your birth.
Actually, your name.
Yeah, but that's what, you know.
I'll tell you what, Farky. I'll mix it up between the Farkman and Farky.
Yeah.
Buddy. Farkas.
Hey, Mitch, you had to wake up early today, huh, bud? You okay?
Actually, I almost didn't even make the podcast here.
Yeah, you're fucking 5 minutes late.
8:15 wake up is...
It's tough, huh?
It's an early morning.
I got to say, I'm a little, annoyed is too strong, but Mitch has me very, very disheveled this morning for a couple of different reasons. Like, Mitch made this huge deal about me and him being together at the Elevate facility and you guys being remote. So he wanted us together and you guys to be remote. So I'm like running equipment and thinking about wires and how it's going to work and all this. And then all of a sudden he's like, you know what? Nah, it's not that big a deal. We don't need to come in. We'll do it remotely again. I'm like, okay, well, I've planned my whole morning around this now.
You got team-itched. That's what he does, Farky. Big grandiose plans. And then he's like, actually, you know what? We're good. We're just, don't even worry about it.
Where are you? Closet, Farky?
I'm in my apartment. I'm in my apartment in the non-decorated side of it so that there's only white walls behind me. I don't have my good headphones. The yippy dog next door might go off at any time now. I have no idea what's going to happen, all because I planned my morning around going to Elevate with you, and now here I am.
You got to think on the fly. You seem very stressed about it.
You seem very straight. Look at Strader. Strader's in suite 510 at, you know... at the freaking Ritz. Look at this guy. Where were you last night?
I was in Boston. Boston, watching Boston and Ottawa. So, yeah, I'm always on the fly, boys. I got to do it. Look, a little adversity is good for you, Brady. I don't know. Brady, not Farky.
I said I was disheveled. I did not say I was irritated or mad. I have the ability to adjust.
Yeah, that tone of voice like would suggest differently.
This is a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode.
Talk some hockey. I don't want to hear about Farkey's stress levels or decorating tips.
Well, I am pumped because Chris Kramer of sportslogos.net is going to be our guest here in episode 5. And seriously, this dude is awesome. We've already taped the interview, so you guys are going to hear it in a bit. But he wrote a book called Fabric of the Game on hockey uniforms and logos and history and how teams got their names. And this guy's got a website that's over 1 million hits a year. And I've been following him for a while, but you guys kind of just got into him. So I'm pumped about this interview. It's a little bit off the hockey ops path, but I think it's so cool. And right, you know, we're getting towards Thanksgiving, towards the holidays. I think it's cool to throw a fun one in here.
when you suggested we talk to him, I honestly was like, he does what? And then I went to his website and I was like, oh my gosh, this guy is, he's got such a unique business. I mean, Strader's his biggest fan now. He's joining the book club.
Dude, I love it. I'm into that stuff. I love the history of things, especially hockey, obviously, because I really care about hockey. So his book actually really, I was like, wow, that's neat. You learn about the logos, you learn about the origins of the name and the colors and stuff. And that's stuff that, I don't know, I think is interesting.
He starts talking about, he got into the Cleveland Barons moving to, I think, was it Jacksonville or something? And I'm like, what? He knows every single, like, every single backstory for every single city and league. It's just crazy.
It's awesome. It's logo. Amazing. I mean, I learned a lot. My brain doesn't work that way. I hear a name, a team name, whatever, a mascot. I'm like, okay, that's who they are. I don't give it thought.
It's pretty impressive.
Before we move forward in episode 5, let's kind of put a bow on episode 4 and let's tie it into some relatively current hockey news now. I'm a little disappointed that we had already taped the Chris Snow interview before the Jack Eichel trade went final, and we found out that the Flames were deep into the Eichel talks. So I know Chris Snow wouldn't have given us anything on it, but when he was with us, it would have been cool to ask him about it. So Eichel gets dealt. He goes to Vegas. You know, a bunch of players, bunch of picks change hands. And I guess the way I want to tie those two things together, I just want to ask all of you about trust between the front office and trust between the players, because it seems like in Eichel's case, there was some trust that was broken there. Either he didn't believe in the organization's direction, he didn't believe in the medical stuff he was being told. And that seemed to me, at least, kind of seal the fate here for the last couple of months that he wanted out. So Chris talked about developing relationships with players, and it seems like the trust in Eichel's case was broken. So, Mitch, I'll just ask you to start. How important is that trust between the two sides?
It's important, but it gets broken a lot, whether it's on the player's end or the GM side. But for me, having experienced going through some crazy injuries and missing, I think I missed about 120 games straight. You're at the rink, you're rehabbing. You start thinking, where do I fit in the lineup now? Does he still like me? And for me in San Jose, that's when there was a bit of a disconnect with the GM and the medical staff. That's when it kind of started. So it's very, very common, but it's very important to have a good relationship there. And when you say trust, I mean, at the end of the day, and Batesy and Strader will know even more than me on this, being on the hockey ops side now, but just look at Suter and Parisi, like it changes like that, where it's all right, these guys aren't doing a whole lot for me now, so I gotta look to move them. It's crazy, you know. You could, and I remember signing in Minnesota the same summer, the same July 1st as Suter and Parisi, and they came in, the owners loved them, the GM loved, Chuck Fletcher loved them, obviously, and it's amazing how it just changes so quick.
More than ever, it's probably important, especially with your star players, right? Like, there's more power within the players now and their voices. Not saying that they didn't before, but because of social media and everything that's gone on in the world, like, there's definitely more power to the players' side these days. And they use, you know, they use it correctly to kind of voice their opinions and how they either want things done or, you know, what they really want. In Jack Eichel's instance, he wanted to be traded, right? So I think the relationship between, you know, the general manager and the star players has to be stronger than ever these days. There's definitely more, like if you date back to, you know, 20 years ago, there probably wasn't as much of groupthink between your star players and whoever was running the team, right? That might not be the case as much anymore. I don't know for a fact, but, you know, I do know that the young star players are probably more prone to, you know, voicing their opinions on how things are done. It's not just for hockey. This is for basically every league now. And as a manager, I feel like you have to respect that and you have to kind of go with the times at this point, or else you're going to lose star players.
Basically, I got something I want to ask you too, but I want to direct something to Mitch here first. How much time does a player give an organization, you think? Because the outside fan can look at it and say, man, Eichel's whining. Shouldn't he want to be here? Shouldn't he want to change the culture? Shouldn't he want to deliver a title to Buffalo? You know, the fan looks at it and says, come on, man, suck it up and, you know, be better, get healthy and win here. And that would be more special. But Eichel's probably like, man, I've given you a lot of time and it hasn't happened yet. So yeah. How much time do you give?
I mean, once that relationship goes south like that, it's, I mean, he even said it, there's new management that came in. Obviously he wanted to get a certain type of surgery. The team wanted him to do something else. There's that disconnect that I either cater to the player or, I mean, like Strader said, that players have so much power now. It's all right. I want out. You don't want to do what I want to do, then I'm going to move on. So I don't know. I mean, to ask the specific how long is a tricky question, but I mean, for him, he wanted one thing, the team wanted another, and they didn't want to do it. So power to the player, I'm out.
How many situations have you seen where there's some kind of fracture between management and a player that gets resolved, you know, and they have a long journey together afterwards, like in any sport? It doesn't happen.
I would say it doesn't happen often unless the player gets everything that he wants. And then when you start giving the player everything that he wants, then the organization finds themselves running a couple other risks.
Well, the other players around him then are going to want, they're going to ask for things that they want too, right? So that's a dangerous precedent. Yeah. So just to go back real quick, Mitch touched upon a managerial change, right? I think that is something that is very unique to the Jack Eichel situation, because here he is drafted second overall in 2015. He's in his sixth year in the NHL. He's gone through three different management structures or regimes. That's wild in that short of a span to have three different messages, right? He's drafted by Tim Murray, Jason Botterill comes in, Kevin Adams comes in. Those are three different messages that he's being sent in how they're going to build a championship team in Buffalo. That is incredibly stressful. I don't care how much you make for a player and the group that is around him, you know? So I think that's very unique to that situation. And that's a challenge that nobody can prepare for.
Funny story on that too. I just a specific story. I'm thinking back of when I was in Minnesota, and Parisi and Suter come in and they bought houses in this town called Edina, and they liked when we practiced at Edina instead of the game rink, which Minnesota is unique. The game rink is also your practice facility. They said, well, because the high school, Edina High School rink is open, we'd like to practice there. And they lived like 5 minutes away. So halfway through the season, we're practicing in Edina High School like 3 days a week. That's wow. The power they had early on. And then there's rumblings in the locker room like, these guys are basically running the team now. Mm-hmm. What is this? You know, what about us? Yeah. What about the foot soldiers? You know, so there's a weird dynamic there. You want to cater to your top guys, but you don't want to expose yourself, I don't think, as a GM or an owner.
And you also got to remember the you talk about trust, right? This whole conversation grew from the question of trust and that foundation. There are so many different elements and layers of trust within a hockey operations department, right? There is trust from ownership to the GM that they have a message and a structure or a philosophy that is going to build a championship team. Then you have trust between the coach and general manager to create and implement a system that is going to build a championship team. And then you have to have trust from 20 guys in an 82 game season to buy into the coach's message to create a championship team, right? So there are all different layers throughout a hockey operations department that are all trusting each other to field a competitive team, right? And to Mitch's point earlier, that trust is broken more often than not because there are just so many different levels.
When a guy is disgruntled, like Eichel was, like we've seen in other sports too, when guys get disgruntled and it's well known out there, what's the vibe in the organization? I'd be interested in all three of your perspectives on that. Batesy, from the front office side, like what's the pressure like on the front office when you know somebody's disgruntled? And Strader and Mitch, as teammates, what's it like when you know things are a little bit off?
From a hockey operations scouting perspective, when you know that a player wants out, shit. That's the challenge, right? Because that message has gotten out there. Now you have You have 31 other teams around the league that know that this guy is unhappy and wants out, right? And that makes your job as a GM or a member of the scouting staff that much more difficult to create a value so that you get an equal value or even more value in a return for that player that wants out, right? We went through this a couple of different times in Vancouver with two very big players or superstars, Roberto Luongo, Ryan Kesler. When both those guys came and said, hey, not at the same time, thankfully, but when both those guys came and said, hey, we want out, you then have to figure out a way to assess the value of the player and understand the trade value within your roster to make something happen, right? So when you make a trade or don't make a trade, you're essentially you've purchased a stock, really, with an expiration date. That expiration date is either the trade deadline or June 30th. If you elect not to sell that stock or trade that player by the deadline, then you've moved to the next deadline. And if on June 30th, that stock expires, you don't have a Stanley Cup to show for it. You didn't maximize the value. So unless the players agreed to an extension, or they've put everything to bed and decided they don't want to get divorced and stay married to you, then you're screwed.
Yeah, how about from a teammate's perspective?
Yeah, it's and I'll let Mitch talk about this more because I haven't really experienced it all that much, to be honest with you. I was in Pittsburgh to start. Good teams. No one wants to not be on a team with Sidney Crosby and Guinea Malkin. Sorry. But then the Isle, it was a little bit different of a situation. And we had a tight-knit group. No one really wanted out. Changes were made. I still remember when Matt Molson got traded away to Buffalo. That was a tough situation for our room just because he was so liked by, you know, all of us and he was such a big part of the team. But to be honest with you, I can imagine what it's like because as a player, you know, you want to obviously keep your buddy around, you want to keep your teammate around that's, you're working with, but at the same time, there's a reason typically why guys want out and you understand that. And they're trying to do what's best for them and what's best for their family and all that stuff too. So I don't think typically as players, I feel like you take, you know, your teammate's side of like, he's got a reason for it. Typically.
And Farkey, just to jump in real quick. Sorry, Mitch. I was just going to say like there are only a handful of teams in the National Hockey League that you can establish a market for when you're trying to trade a superstar. You know, so many people are like, why did it take so long for Eichel to get
dealt? Especially when he makes $10 million. It's really
right,
hard.
Exactly. When his AAV is 10 sheets, I mean, not many people, especially in a limited salary cap world, can take that kind of money on. And as we learned, you know, after the fact, Buffalo didn't want to retain any salary. So that just makes your job so much harder.
It's a big shakeup.
It's a huge shakeup. It's a huge shakeup for a number of reasons. But again, there are only a handful of teams that you can actually create a market for. So, kudos to Kevin Adams for the job he did, because that is no easy feat, especially for a first year GM.
No. Just to finish the point from a player's perspective, I've had it happen twice. They weren't all-star players. I won't name names, but they were really well-liked guys in the locker room. So I don't know, from a teammate player perspective, if it's a guy that you like as a teammate and maybe even a friend, it's kind of nice to have someone challenge the GM, you know, you're like kind of, you're rooting for him. You want the best for him. Obviously you still want him on your team, but that business side of things, it's as a teammate, it's that. And if you like that teammate, it's kind of fun. Is that weird to say?
Mitch is actually referring to himself. He's like, it was me. I was challenging the grass.
I sure was not. I was falling in line.
Yeah, good soldier. Jeez.
I want to finish up this conversation before we get to Chris Kramer, but I do have one more question for Mitch and maybe a little bit for everybody too. You talk about being, I'm putting the word in it, maybe resentful a little bit of the situation in Minnesota where the guys got to run the show there. Is there a point where you're okay with a player having that much power? Is it the guy's been there for a long time? He's been there for a decade and therefore he deserves it. He's earned the right. Is it just, hey, the guy has won. You know, Tom Brady goes to Tampa. He hasn't been there, but he's won six Super Bowls. And the guy says, hey, we'll do whatever Tom wants to do because he's won so much. Like, is it a winning pedigree that allows that? Is it a length of time that someone's been there that allows that?
It's both. I mean, you get a guy like Joe Thornton. I know he hasn't won, but his pedigree, he's earned the right to, you know, take an optional skate and to challenge the coach and to be treated a little bit differently. Yeah. That would just be silly to even be resentful toward that as well. But on the flip side, when you see the coach come in and push those top players and challenge those top players and treat them the same as the other guys on the team, you start creating a winning culture.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And from my perspective, I still remember my time in Pittsburgh. Like, the really top end players and the guys who drive, like that's what Sid wanted. Sid didn't want really to be a part of like decision making and how things are run on. Sid wanted to be coached. Sid always wanted to be coached. And that's why he's obviously been the greatest player in the game for quite a while and he's won cups. But, you know, it's that like galvanizes a room, I believe.
And it does.
You just follow that leader.
And when you see the leaders challenging the coach and the coach challenging the leaders, it's like, you know, as someone who's not a power play guy, you're kind of
walking
like
on eggshells sometimes.
Yeah. You know, am I still in the lineup? Am I green or what color am I there?
Am I green?
anybody need a sip of water? I got an extra water bottle here.
Yeah. Give me a stick. Yeah. Right. It's I don't know. That creates such a winning culture, at least from my experience, and I'm pretty sure it's like that all around in any sport, really. I think
guys are so competitive too. You know, like it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter if you're top line center or 13th forward or seventh defenseman, whatever, backup goalie. Like if you're in the NHL, you are a competitive guy, and you want to win. And I think, from my experience, that holds true for guys up top and in the press box too. You know, you want to win, you want to figure out a way to contribute and be a part of it. I think that is so important. Everyone has their own philosophy. There's no blueprint. You know, people have good ideas, but there's no, you know, surefire way to build a winning team. That's the reality of it.
Well, I think that's a good spot to end our kind of recap of Chris Snow and the front office relationships and the Eichel stuff. And now I want to get to our interview for today with Chris Kramer of sportslogos.net. Again, 1 million hits a year he gets on his website for the history of team uniforms and logos. It's a fascinating conversation. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. So here it is, Chris Kramer.
The Elevate 02 podcast is brought to you in part by Frank Crum. Frank Crum is a professional employer organization that partners with businesses to assist with human resources, workers' compensation insurance, risk management, employee benefits, and payroll administration. When you partner with Frank Crum, you are increasing your profits, productivity, saving a ton of time, and reducing your liability and cost. They are unique to the PEO industry because they own their own workers' compensation carrier, Frank Winston Crum Insurance. And they work with difficult industries like construction, roofing, plumbing, electricians, and even some trucking. Visit frankcrum.com and tell them Elevate 02 sent you. And if you're an insurance agent or broker, visit frankcrum.com to hear how you can offer Frank Crum's PEO services to your clients.
All right, I want to welcome in our guest, somebody I'm very, very excited to talk with. It's our guy, Chris Kramer. He is the founder and creator of sportslogos.net, which I believe is the most trafficked sports uniform website on the planet. He's also the author of a book on hockey uniforms called Fabric of the Game, about uniforms, logos, team name, origins, etc. So I have spoken to Chris before. You guys haven't, so I'm pumped for you guys to talk to him too. So, Chris, what's up, man?
Oh, nothing much. You know, just getting ready for that inevitable winter that's coming up here in Canada any day now. I just know it's coming.
It is certainly coming. And I think I'm going to start with this because, again, we've spoken before through my radio shows before. But when I brought the idea of having you on this podcast, the first thing Batesy said was, what an interesting business. And I just want to start there. You've been doing this since you were 14 years old. How did sportslogos.net start? And where did this fascination with uniforms and hosiery come from?
Hosiery, that's a good word.
Thank you.
So, yeah, just when I was a kid, I that was sort of the first thing I noticed when I'd go to a game. You know, I was interested in the game, but I was more interested in how the scoreboard was designed, what the uniforms look like, the ads on the boards. For whatever reason, I took an interest in the branding around the game, more so than the game itself. And from there, it went from, you know, sketching logos on school books instead of listening to the teacher. At the same time, my dad came home with a start your own internet kit. I was about 13, 14, and I said, I got to figure out how to do this. And, well, why not do a site about logos? I'm clearly have some sort of affinity for them. And really, that's where it started. Just an excuse to build a web page and learn how it all works. And somehow it exploded to now my full-time job and doing it as I'm about to enter my 40s, something I started when I was in the ninth grade. It's nuts. And now, like, you know, my kid's 8 years old, uses my website to go look up logos.
That's awesome.
So here I am growing up, and I'm sure Batesy and Strader are the same way, obsessing over Pavel Bure's tape job and what skates he's wearing when we're going to games. And you're sitting there trying to figure out uniforms and scoreboards. And that's interesting. That's wild, man.
Yeah, like I can remember my first game I ever went to, maybe 7, 8 years old. It was an OHL game in Cornwall, Ontario. The old Cornwall Royals were playing the old Toronto Marlboros. Mm-hmm. And the Marlboros back then wore basically Toronto Maple Leaf uniforms, just with a crown on the leaf instead of the words. And I had convinced myself that was the actual Toronto Maple Leafs I was seeing. And that crown only showed up if you were at the game in person. You know, switch the words if you're watching on TV. Just an example of, you know, 7, 8 years old, and I'm just obsessed with the of that uniform.
So Chris, do you work with teams to design now? Do you, like, are equipment managers calling you and saying, hey, like, what do you think about this setup? And you know, just kind of talk about your relationship with teams and how that sort of works.
I've never designed anything for a team. You know, I leave that to the experts, the pros.
Sure.
I've consulted a few times. They've sent me things. And what do you think about this? Do you think people will like this? I'm always happy to help there. I do that for free. It's just out of love for the industry. Mostly I work with teams now in helping promote when a new item comes out. So, for example, today there's going to be a big release in the AHL, which I'm working with the team to help them get the word out, spread the word. They send me the materials in advance, gives me an opportunity to interview, ask some questions, and put together my article. So as soon as it goes live, I can just hit go. Getting to see these things beforehand, it's both kind of cool and that kind of ruins the surprise a bit, right? Like I used to be, you know, just watching the unveiling with everyone else, being surprised at the same time, being able to react in real time. And now it's more, it's more work now, right? Like, so when a uniform comes out now, it's okay. I'm working for the rest of the day. And maybe I'll get a chance to enjoy this, you know, tomorrow or 2 days from now and actually just enjoy this logo as a fan again.
So did you see all the Kraken uniforms or maybe even the logo and name prior to anybody else?
I saw the logo. I saw the name. I didn't see the uniforms until they came out.
Okay.
Now that was like a couple of days before they came out that I actually saw it. So, when that happens, I'm very careful from that point forward. Okay. I'm not going to leak anything. I'm not going to spill anything. Unless I see it somewhere else, then maybe I'll.
Do you like them? Do you think what are your thoughts on the Kraken uniforms head to toe?
Oh, I think they're great. You know, it's that shade of ice blue that they use. It's striking. It pops off the jersey, that really, really bright blue.
Ice blue.
And that story it tells, it's supposed to show you, like, you know, the Kraken is something that lives deep under the water, right? And how do you show something living deep under the water just through color? And they do that by four different shades of blue, which gradually goes from light to dark. You know, you're going below the surface. I think it's a really interesting story.
Can I ask this question? I'm actually a Seattle diehard fan. And it's not that I don't like the Kraken uniforms. They're sharp uniforms. I don't love the color choice only because I like when every team in the same city has a similar color pattern. So when I think of the Mariners, they're blue and green. When I think of the Seahawks, they're blue and green. I don't get that same green in the Kraken. Like Penguins, Pirates, Steelers are all the same colors. Do you like when cities have the same group of colors or when each organization has their own identity?
I go back and forth on that. You know, depends what day it is. I thought for sure Seattle was going to go with the blue and the green like the Seahawks and the Mariners. I got a lot of pushback from Seattle fans when I was posting that on Twitter saying, no way, I don't want that at all. And the Kraken would be foolish to do something like that. A lot of the arguments to that was people would be less likely to buy Kraken merchandise if they could just come to the game in a Mariners jersey or whatever, which I don't really buy. But, you know, you're going to a Kraken game. You want that big S on your chest, right? Like you don't want a Mariners jersey on. That doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But, you know, something for a team like the Pirates and for a while, I'm sorry, a city like Pittsburgh and for a while, a city like Toronto, where every team was blue and white, you know, it's good. It shows some civic pride. It shows that we're all in this together. But, you know, what if you live in Pittsburgh and you don't like the color gold? What are you supposed to do? You know, you're stuck. You have nobody to cheer for and you can't wear anything. So, you know, maybe it's good to switch things up from team to team.
So I have a question. Historically speaking, I mean, you have the original six franchises and the evolution of those logos really hasn't been broad, right? I mean, when you think about the Montreal Canadiens and they've always had that C for really since they've been created. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that and kind of, you know, the evolution of other teams and their logos?
A good logo needs more than just a good design, right? Like we could sit here and argue that, you know, well, if the Canadians came out with that logo today, would people like it or would they hate it? Right. They'd think it's too boring. There's nothing to it. The Canadians logo, the Bruins logo, the Rangers logo, these are all great logos because they've been around forever. They've all won multiple championships. There's such a legacy and a story tied to them. Like Money Mitch over here.
Oh, don't.
Talk me up.
How brutal is that logo on his hat?
Yeah. Money Mitch here, you know. He wore the same uniform, same logo as Maurice Richard, as Jean Beliveau, as Henri Richard, right? That's got to be a pretty cool feeling.
That's worth something, huh?
So, yeah, I think that's worth something. I would love to wear that uniform, even though I hate the Canadians.
So you're basically saying the older, we just love those original six logos because there's so much history behind them. That's it, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Come on, Chris. You're telling me that the Blackhawks logo is, I mean, that's only... We only like that because of the original. I don't buy that. I think the Blackhawks logo and uniforms head to toe are the sharpest in the league.
It's not the only reason why we like it, but it's a reason. It is a reason why we like it.
It's the driving factor.
Like it, okay, right? That's fair. So, that's fair. I also just don't like Money Mitch to be right. You know,
if you guys got something to hammer out,
No.
Well, we always do.
Yeah.
Always.
It happens every podcast.
Chris, to become a uniform expert, were you just a fan who just started cataloging this stuff and that's how you became an expert? Or do you have a degree in fashion and things like that where you can, okay, the lines should be going this way or the stripes are too big? Like, I mean, what's your background in that?
I have a degree in web developing. That's it. You know, I'm a sports logo uniform fan like anyone else. You know, back in the day before the internet, the only way I could see the old uniforms was if I came across an old hockey card from 20, 30 years ago. And okay, what the heck team is this? It's got a hockey stick on their jersey. You know, who could this possibly be? Literally, it could be anybody.
Yeah.
And then you look on the back. Oh, it says Canucks. Well, why the heck are the Canucks wearing a hockey stick on their jersey? And that gets the mind going, right? So from there, I thought, okay, well, let's catalog all this stuff and put it online. And you know, I got a little bit of OCD, so got to make sure it's complete. Got to make sure it's finished. And you know, a little bit of drive over 25 years, and here we are.
Mitch Strader, did you guys ever have to wear any like theme night uniforms, maybe in the minors, AHL, et cetera? Did you ever have to wear anything that, you know, you kind of look sideways at?
Star Wars night?
SpongeBob night?
Wilkes-Barre was the king of that. Every holiday, once a month, you'd have the theme jersey, and they were her. You know, the worst part about it is I don't care about design. I'm not a big... how it looks fan, but like the feel of it, right? And they always use the cheap stuff on those jerseys because they're going to be one and done and they're going to sell them to some fan after. So they were always cheap. They're always like goalie cut, baggy. I hated that.
You get back after warmups and you – or I mean, I don't know if you were wearing them the whole game there, Strader, but you get back after warmups, you sign them, and they're gone. They auction them off. I'm sure mine didn't get auctioned off for very much. But I remember the St. Patty's Day in San Jose. It was I'd come in and I'd look up in my stall and it was Mick Mitchell. And I was like, what is circus? What type? I'm a circus animal. And all the guys had Mick or whatever on their added to their names.
Mitchell.
Yeah, Mitchell. Exactly. Oh, and Mick. On everything, but yeah, you just sign them after warmups and then they sell them. But yeah, I guess just another way to get more jersey sales.
I must have been weird for you, Mitch, to have such a silly name attached to you there. I can't imagine what that'd be like, right?
Thank you. You know, it should have said McMoney Mitch.
Then that would have sold,
right, Chris?
All right. Serious question though, Chris. Like, do you know what goes into picking a logo? Like, how do teams? Like Seattle comes in, they decide they're going to be called the Kraken. Then how does that process work? Do they hire a team of designers or like they go to different agencies and say, all right, like you guys give us your three best and we're going to pick one?
How it works now with, you know, everything is very centralized these days. So for the Kraken, once the name was settled on, they go to Adidas. Gets their team together. They start doing some research design. They might farm out some designs to other local designers. They come together, they sketch, you know, 5 to 10 concepts, present it to the board. And from there they tweak and refine. The whole process usually takes over a year, year and a half. Once they settle on 2 or 3 designs, they bring in some fans, they focus group, focus test, and they narrow it down. They try to clear trademarks. And they do it all while making sure nothing leaks. It's a business to do. You have to make sure, you know, make everybody happy, right? Because essentially a logo is, in a way, shaping your fans' wardrobes and changing the colors. Some of them might decorate their houses with, you know, some of the more fanatics. Some people are buried in team logo caskets now. So it's a pretty serious decision for some people.
A way to make it dark, buddy. Jeez.
Oh, we do
like that. Realities of life.
Yeah. Well, give us some of your favorites. It doesn't have to be in the NHL, but like some of your favorites, what are they?
Well, my go-to favorite is always the Hartford Whalers. Just a classic for me. To me, the best logo is something that combines several elements together to create its own element. And the Whalers do that with its W, the whale tail at the top. And then if you look between the tail and the W, you got that H hidden in between the two for Hartford. So simple, but so brilliant. So much so that, you know, they never really changed it from the day they entered the league till the day they left. And Carolina now wears the uniforms and it's probably their most popular uniform 20 something years after they left the NHL.
That's going to make my old man so happy. He's a diehard Whale fan.
Yeah, he is.
How does your old man feel about the Hurricanes wearing the Whalers uniforms?
I think he loves it. I don't know.
Oh, wow. That is the biggest.
It. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was going to ask that same question, Chris. I'm well known, like, in my radio business as the fan police, and I have very strong feelings on this. If your team was stolen by another city, essentially, or sold out to another city, that city has no right to wear the jersey. Like I was a Seattle Sonics fan. If the Thunder ever wore Sonics jerseys, I would go to Oklahoma City and protest myself. The fact that the Avalanche were wearing Nordiques jerseys last year and they didn't honor them for the 20 years prior, completely garbage. The Nationals wearing the Expos jerseys, ridiculous. And the Hurricanes, you know, wearing the Whalers jerseys. Come on. I don't ever want to see that stuff happen again.
Chris, I know, you know, Farkey a little bit, but he comes, when he comes, it's off that top rope.
Yeah.
Top rope. There was some passion.
I love it. I love that. He basically said, suck it, Batesy. Shut up.
Because it's happened to me. If the Oklahoma City Thunder wore the Sonics jerseys, I would not be okay with it. My dad was an original Cleveland Browns fan. And if the Ravens had ever worn Browns jerseys, he would have been off the top shelf too. So I just, when it's happened to you, I think, you know, come from a different perspective.
It's so funny you bring that up though. Like I'm at a, a parade earlier this year, and I just got the back of this one guy, and he has a Svechnikov jersey on, but it's white with blue and green trim. I'm like, Svechnikov, like, I'm like, what colors are those? And he turns around, it's a Whalers jersey. I'm like, why would you be wearing a Whalers Svechnikov jersey played for the Whalers? But I didn't even know that they use those jerseys now.
Yeah, they wear them 2-3 times a year. Last year, they even updated them for the reverse retro program. They wore a design the Whalers never wore, basically. My feelings on this, and Farkas is going to disagree, and that's okay. He's been hurt, so I forgive him. I would rather see the Hurricanes wear the Whalers jersey than Avalanche with a Nordiques jersey than to have those uniforms locked away in a closet gathering dust forever. Those uniforms are too good to be not seen by anybody. And while it's not quite the same, you know, I was a Montreal Expos fan. They moved to Washington, and I was thrilled when I saw Washington wear the Expos uniforms, just for one time at least, just to relive those memories one more time.
Here's my idea, you know, and I understand why money-wise and all this, it won't happen, so whatever. But here's the idea for me. Put the All-Star game in Quebec, and half the team can wear the red Nordiques jerseys, and half the team can wear the white jerseys. Put the All-Star game in Hartford, let them wear green Whalers jerseys, let them wear white Whalers jerseys. That's what I would say. Give the All-Star team or All-Star game to those cities and let the jerseys be worn then.
No argument for me.
Weren't the Nords baby blue?
Yes. I didn't want to correct him on his own.
Sorry.
He's on a rampage.
Before they moved to Colorado, weren't they going to have jerseys, though, that had a red element to them? No, they were going to change them up entirely, weren't they?
Yeah, entirely new uniform. It had a husky on the front.
Yes.
A lot of triangles. Really? The 90s were all about triangles, apparently.
I got another question for you, Chris. I'm just curious, and I know there's so much history behind these teams or colleges and programs, but the logos that stick, and you see them in airports, you see them when you travel all over the world, they're up in Canada, they're up in the I'm thinking of like the Georgetown Hoyas, I'm thinking about that Michigan M, I'm thinking you know, the Yankees, the Lakers, you'll see Lakers stuff all over China, all over Asia. Those logos, aside from, you know, obviously the history of the team, Why do those logos stick? Notre Dame, why do they stick worldwide? It's crazy to me how big some of those logos are.
I mean, you can't ignore the history. That's such a big part of it, though. The history, the championships, seeing them worn, you know, if you're talking around the world, just seeing like American celebrities wearing them, like that's a big factor around the world. And they just have staying power, right? Like that Yankee symbol. Right?
It's crazy.
It's insane where you see it, like going to Europe. You'll see people wearing Yankee caps everywhere. They might not even know what team it is, right? It's just such a symbol associated with winning championships, you know, the feeling of USA being number one. That's all it is. It's just association with good times and celebrities and prosperity.
Yeah. Mitch, you spend a lot of time in China?
I've been to Asia before, believe it or not. We want to go there right now.
You're like, you see him all over China. I'm like, what the fuck's this guy been to China?
He's money.
Yeah.
I've been to Hong Kong.
What a city. Hong Kong's awesome. Anyways.
Chris, talk to me about the book, Fabric of the Game. It was about kind of the origins of logos, the origins of... Yeah, Strader said he wants the book now.
I need one of these.
He wants a signed copy.
I'm a history major, so I love all American history and sports history. So this is neat.
Copy. Oh, one of those.
Oh, baby.
Okay.
Wow. Look at that.
Got a box of them right here.
Yeah. Not a big deal.
Well, we'll gladly pay the 1995 or whatever it would take to get it. So we would love one. The impetus for the book was what, and kind of what's a good takeaway from the book? Something that, you know, we got to go to the book to get.
Okay. Well, the reason why I did the book was, when the NHL celebrated its centennial season in 2017, I was fortunate enough to be asked by the league to help with that. And my role was to go to the Hockey Hall of Fame's Resource Center, sit in a giant warehouse full of all the artifacts that weren't currently on display at the Hall of Fame, and go through all those and figure out exactly what logo was worn in what year for every single team. So the little differences in the Blackhawks logo over the years, you know, pulling out, okay, well, to figure out the difference, I got to pull out this Glenn Hall game-worn jersey and put it next to the Stan Mikita game-worn and put it next to this Tony Esposito jersey and look at the little differences in the crest from year to year and, you know, try to do it without freaking out.
Yeah. Act like you've been there.
Right. So while I was there, I started just, you know, in my downtime, I would flip through old game programs from like the 1920s and the 1930s. And occasionally you would see a little story in there, you know, how we got our name, how we got our logo. And I'm like, these stories have never actually been told from, you know, written from the actual 20s. It's always been, oh, so-and-so won a contest. They picked their name. We don't know why. And I thought, well, I really want to do deep dives on these and tell people the stories of why these names were picked, why these colors were picked, why the logos were picked, and interview the people involved and finally get the stories once and for all. If you do a quick internet search for, you know, how did this team get its name, you'll get an article on NHL.com and each team has two or three sentences. And that's not enough, right? Like there's more to that story. And every single one of these teams thought this was the most important decision in the world for them at one point. And the stories are lost. So now I put them all together. We did every single team that ever played a second of NHL hockey from the Montreal Wanderers, who played four games in 1917, right up to the Seattle Kraken, who hadn't even played a game yet when we published the book. Every single team's in there and their story's told. They get their own dedicated chapter.
What's the best name story?
There's a couple I really like. Batesy might like the Vancouver Canucks story. How, you know, the story I always heard about the Canucks was, well, it was the name of their minor league team, period. Well, okay. How did the minor league team pick the name? That's what I want to know. So we went all the way back to the 1940s.
Wasn't it the Vancouver Millionaires?
The Millionaires were a Pacific League team in like 1917, 1918.
Okay. Okay, sorry.
So in the 40s, they started this, it was called the Western Hockey League at the time, no relation to the current Junior League. And they wanted a name for their team. And this guy who was starting it up, he had a buddy who was a bootlegger, a rum runner, you know, real good guy, right? Making sure everyone has a good time. And he says, hey, what should I call this team? He goes, just call them the Canucks after Johnny Canuck, the old comic book character, or the newspaper cartoon. Johnny Canuck is like Canada's Uncle Sam, basically.
The lumberjack. Mm-hmm. He's like an old school lumberjack, essentially.
Yeah. But at the time, he was whatever you needed him to be. Like he was a lumberjack. He was a farmer. He was a soldier. He was anything that Canadians needed rallying for, right?
Unlike Uncle Sam, he did it all. You could say it. It's fine, Chris. I'm with you, bro.
All I'm hearing from about Johnny Canuck is he's like Batman, right? Like, come on.
That's right. I mean,
oh wow.
Without the money.
Anyways.
So the Canucks got their name from a run runner. Mm-hmm. I like that. A rum runner, a bootlegger. Another quick story that I thought was interesting was the Cleveland Barons. Anyone remember the Barons?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Two seasons in the 1970s. They used to be the California Golden Seals.
Yeah.
Buddy moves his team to Cleveland. They're doing horrible, right? Like, they don't even have Cleveland Barons hockey pucks for their first game. They have to use the old Golden Seals pucks. But to get the name, there was a Cleveland Barons AHL team. They moved to Jacksonville. And the guy who owned that name said, you can have my name if you want, but you got to take my wife and I out for dinner.
And come on.
That was
how the Cleveland Barons got their name. No, you know, dump trucks full of cash, no jewelry. Just take my wife out for a night on the town. We'll have a good time.
Let's go to McDonald's drive-thru.
That's right.
That's cool.
It's awesome.
We're coming up towards the end of our time here. Anybody else got anything for Chris here before we let him go?
I could use a couple more of those logo stories. You got a few more good ones?
Yeah, those are good.
I do, and they're in this book.
All right.
The game, the stories behind the NHL's names, logos, and uniforms by myself and Todd Radom. Forward by Lanny McDonald. That was a fun phone call.
You got cool. The Vancouver V was on there, I saw.
I do, yeah. And you couldn't see the Whalers because my green screen is turning it into Maple Leaf Gardens. But they're in
there. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
And there's the red Nordiques jersey for Brady.
Yeah. All right. My bad. Sorry. Yes, see, baby
Flames on there.
Yeah. Oh God. Awesome.
What's the
man.
Worst logo in the NFL or in the NHL? I got asked that. The worst one.
Oh, put me on the spot because all my friends design these logos now. Oh.
your least favorite. You can. We'll clarify. What's your least favorite?
I got to say, I loved it when it first came out, but I'm kind of getting bored with it, and that's the Washington Capitals.
Mm.
I understand the history behind it, but if you're going to go with that logo, just go back to the original one. This new modernized one is, you know, it's very 2007.
Yeah.
It hasn't aged well. It was awesome when it first came out. I loved it. I love that the eagle with the Capitol Dome on the shoulder. Maybe make that the logo. Mm. But, yeah, it won the Stanley Cup, but it's time.
Yeah, it screams. That's what it speaks to me too. Very 2007. That's what I thought too.
That's exactly what you thought. Yeah. A very specific year.
Yeah. Well, Chris Kramer, sportslogos.net. That is the foremost authority on all things uniforms and logos, all sports. But we know he's got a soft spot for hockey. He wrote the book on hockey uniforms, Fabric of the Game. We're going to make sure we get our copy. You should too. So, Chris, man, we appreciate the time and we'd love to do it again as the podcast continues to grow.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys, and best of luck with the podcast.
The Elevate 02 podcast is brought to you in part by Parkview Air Medical. Parkview Air Medical provides professional medical escorts consisting of fully certified ACLS-trained paramedics, registered nurses, and physicians. These escorts accompany your patient, your family member, your friends on major commercial airlines. These transports can also be done via train and cruise ships for those who can't fly. They will assist you in making sure that the journey is safe and stress-free. They'll coordinate the transportation needs to and from the airport, along with wheelchair, seat-to-seat transfers, and baggage assistance. They will ensure a smooth bedside-to-bedside transition. You can learn more about Parkview Air Medical online at parkviewairmedical.com. They've got a huge medical staff pool. They're able to meet those last-minute requests, and they can have an escort with you or your patient or family member in just a matter of hours. And they have access to visa procurement services also. It's Parkview Air Medical online at parkviewairmedical.com.
All right, that was awesome with Chris Kramer. I think that guy is so cool, and I've had him on a bunch before on my radio shows, and every time I talk to him, there's something different there. I love how Mitch tried to get a little bit more out of him on another logo story or name story. He's like, it's in the book. Go buy the book. Yeah.
You got big time.
I loved it.
I can't look. Since we did that, I can't look at a logo without thinking now, oh, I wonder, you know, where the origin of this came from. Like that's, he's changed my thought process after talking to him.
And what a fascinating guy though, huh?
Yeah.
And he's just like... Like I said, we're watching games as kids, looking at the players' equipment, and he's analyzing the scoreboard and the logo. Like, yeah. What a freak.
The advertising on the boards.
Yeah, what? Okay.
That's and impressive. Once you know, like, about, like, a little in of the logo, you can't unsee it. Like,
right.
The FedEx logo, once I found out there's a little arrow in it, I can't unsee that.
Sparky, I was kicking myself after because I wanted to ask him about that. I know it's not sports related, but same thing. You know, the FedEx logo is universally known as one of the most impressive logos ever. And it's because of that stupid freaking arrow.
The big
hold on, Sparky. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I don't think Mitch has any idea what we're talking about. Mitch, you know about the FedEx logo?
Huh?
Exactly.
No.
If you look at the words FedEx, there's a giant arrow in between the D and the E. That shows, like, you know, the delivery capabilities and all that. So
I'm not gonna lie, I didn't know about that. I don't know about that.
You didn't,
Strader? You got no.
I mean, why would I? Why?
Are you seeing it? Are you looking it up now?
I'm not like looking up, you know, what every logo in every company's history. Well, stands for.
Wow. The Big Ten conference before the Big Ten expanded, the words Big Ten actually had two ones on the side of it for the 11 teams that were actually in the Big Ten. So it said Big Ten, but there were two ones inside of it showing 11. It sounds crazy once you know it.
Of course.
This could be your new nickname. Maybe we call you Brady Kramer. Oh. The sign guy.
I'm most embarrassed by the fact that I got a little bit hopped up in that conversation about teams wearing jerseys of cities that they used to be in, that I said the Nordiques wore red. Of course they didn't wear red, and I knew that, but I got so hopped up about it that
I was so confused with that one. I'm like,
I know.
Red.
There's red in the color scheme. I just screwed up. I swear.
The logo's red. Yeah.
Afterwards, I went looking for an alternate jersey. I'm like, one time did they wear red? Just one time did they wear red?
You've been a little stressed out a little, I feel like, with all
in the closet.
Conversation. Yeah, I mean, he's in the closet. Exactly.
Mitch, did you have a Joe Sakic Nordiques jersey since he was your boyhood hero?
I had an Avalanche one and a Team Canada from Salt Lake. So 2002 Olympics when...
Oh, God.
Maybe we don't need to go there.
Give me a break.
Are you guys jersey guys? Like when you were growing up, did you have jerseys? And how do you feel about adults wearing jerseys? Like if you're at a game and you see a 31-year-old rocking a Torrey Mitchell jersey, are you honored or are you like, that guy is a loser?
look at his head growing right now. Is he honored?
Well, no, you need fans like that. I'll say that. Every team needs fans like that. Usually the ones, if there was an adult male wearing my jersey that I wasn't really good friends with or family with, there was some question marks going on.
Oh, wow.
What's this guy doing? But that's just because I was a fourth line grinder, hardly, you know, and then you look up in the crowd, you're like, what? I don't even know that guy. He's got my jersey on. Interesting. What is this?
So you
won it at a raffle. It was a giveaway.
Totally.
So you're not judging the guy who shows up at Football Sunday at the tailgate rocking the quarterback's jersey and he's 52 years old?
No. Football is different with the jerseys, too. No, I like that. Love it. Yeah.
Do people honestly get mad about that? About adults wearing jerseys?
Really?
Yes. Seriously?
People think that grown men shouldn't.
Did you know that?
I've heard of this. I don't agree with it. It's just like, you know. I'm getting mad at what somebody's wearing. I don't know. I don't get it. I honestly don't get it. You know, I wear Brady jersey all the time.
The whole thing is like
favorite player ever.
Should a grown man be idolizing another man? Like that's like what it comes down to for people. Like people who have a problem with it.
It's not always like idolizing another man. It's sometimes, you know, from my point of view, right? The poor people that got stuck with the straight Islander jerseys. You know, it's more about who's on the front of the jersey than the back, right? They probably they probably won it in some kind of raffle or whatever. I don't think they went and seeked out a Brian Strait jersey, the number 6'8" defenseman for the Isles, but you never know. I mean, I always think it's cool when I show up to games at an Isles game or whatever, and I see that one guy wearing a straight, I'm like, I'll take a picture of it. I found one.
We were trying to ask Chris what the worst logo was or the worst uniform. You know, he got into it a bit, but you know, he didn't want to go too deep into that road. I was trying to think what I think the worst uniforms or worst logos are in the NHL. I got to tell you, when the Dallas Stars rebranded and went more to this green, I am not a fan. I liked them better. Like the North Stars jerseys were awesome. Then they went to Dallas and Modano's there and it was black and gold. I thought they were sharp. But this green now is doing nothing for me.
You know that? So like, you know, like their third jersey they wear now, Farkey, the black with like the neon green.
Yes.
Like, you know what that reminds me of? Like, did you guys ever go to a birthday party when you were a kid for laser tag? You know, and like that's what it reminds me of. Like that, like bright neon that you would see in like a laser tag studio as a kid. Yeah. I know that's super random, but. Yeah.
It seems like the when it kind of like depend on when you came into the league, too. Like there's that, you know, area of like these teams that came into the league and one of the Panthers jump in like the 90s,
96 or so. Oh, okay.
And then when did Carolina come in?
Carolina moved. When did they move? 97. They moved from Hartford to Carolina.
That area right there, I'm not like over the top about their uniforms or jerseys or whatnot, but like it's just kind of they're who they are, right? Like Carolina, I look at it like I understand it. It's a hurricane and all that stuff. And it's just like, it's just so like, it looks like blah at this point, you know?
Yeah, that's the one for me. Creamer got into the old Hartford Whalers jerseys, which are awesome. But then I was thinking, oh man, the Hurricanes jerseys are just never, they just never did it for me. And I don't know if that's because of, you know, we talked about like the history of the logos and stuff, and they haven't been around as much. But for me, the Canes is
probably. Well, I don't like the Ducks logo.
Really?
Yeah. The new ducks are kind of weird.
I don't know. It just doesn't pop like.
Yep. Another 90s entrance, right? Like, it's hard though that era. They're still trying to find their identity.
I know, but I found like the sharks and the ducks, like it just kind of like, I don't know. People really loved them when they first came out. Let's say that. I'll say that. Both jerseys for sure.
Yeah.
And we've talked about the movie. Like, I think if the ducks were I'm just saying like the movie ones were more classic because they're more iconic. The ones they have now with the black and the orange and all that, it's a total deviation from the color scheme even that they came in with. So like, well, I'm not a huge fan of that.
They wanted to break away from Disney, right? There was a business element to it.
Yeah.
Right? And I can understand that, Disney but our minds, like, you know, I think go to that place. I'll end it on this. Do players care what uniforms they're wearing? Because there's the story Chris Sale with the White Sox cut up his alternate uniform so the team couldn't wear them because he hated them so much. So he cut it up with scissors so the team would have to wear the regular jerseys. Do players care that much about what uniform you're wearing on a given night?
No, not really. You're just happy to be there.
Yeah.
You're happy to be able to represent an NHL team and make a lot of money and live out your childhood dream. But I will say there is, if you get a chance to play on an original six team, you throw one of those jerseys on, it hits way different. Mm-hmm. For me, it did. It was like, whoa.
Well, it's got to be awesome. It's got to be part of the history too, right? Like we talk about this. I mean, the history behind those uniforms. Whew, you think about all the guys that wore that, legends of the game wore those before.
Oh, yeah. And just walking in those locker rooms or down the hallways of the gym or the training room, you know, you see some of the old names, the legends of the games that played for those teams. It's you pinch yourself sometimes reading those things.
For sure. You don't really care, but there is some superstition to it as well. Like if you're like on a heater, right? Like you don't want to be changing your jerseys. Huh. If it's with the third jersey, it's like, I still remember we went on a heater in New York at one point. And do you remember those terrible Isles jerseys, the black with like blue?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Were they bad? They were hideous.
Was there silver in there too? Maybe.
Yeah. There was so many colors. Yeah. It was disgusting, but we ended up going on like a heater with those jerseys and no one liked them. Like everyone hated the jerseys, you know, they didn't fit right. They weren't good, but we were like, we have to keep wearing them. Like we can't not wear them until we lose. So the equipment manager's like, all right, you know, I don't know if they have to file paperwork or whatnot, but whenever we were home, we were wearing those things until it ran out, you know?
Well, it was a great conversation with Chris Kramer. I think it's a good spot to end it here. We always like to try to keep these around an hour or so. So we're right around that limit now. Episode 5 about to be in the books. Let's carry out the logistical stuff here. We are everywhere now. So you can follow us everywhere. There's the Elevate 02 podcast page on Instagram. There's Elevate 02 on Instagram. We're on YouTube at Elevate 02, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can follow Elevate 02 on Twitter also. So you can see our content everywhere. You can send us an email with a review or a question at the Elevate 02 podcast. So Elevate02podcast@gmail.com. I've had people talk to me about the Farkey nickname there with emails. And somebody said they love watching the podcast on YouTube so they can follow Strader's beard growth as we get through the episodes.
Man,
they're going to like it this week. They're going to like it this week.
You just shaved this morning? Look at that thing.
Thick. Yesterday, actually. Like I said.
Are you seriously? You know, That's from one day?
No, I didn't shave the whole thing. No, I shave here and I shave the neck, you know? God, it's just a comfort thing at this point. You let her grow.
You shave
her. You'll let her grow. You'll let her grow. It's that time of year. It's November.
Absolutely. So, hey, next episode is going to be our Thanksgiving episode. We're going to be out right before Thanksgiving. So, Mitch, I want to find out from you the differences between Canadian Thanksgiving and American Thanksgiving. So we'll have some fun with that. And we've got a huge guest coming in episode number 6. So stay tuned for that, everybody. Strader, Batesy, Mitch, we'll see you in episode 6.